The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder if the mainstream media believes in God. Oh, sure they do. Or at least a God who agrees with their positions. They'll give sanctimonious lectures about how Jesus would want us to open our borders, or how compassionate it is, biblical compassion, to allow people to vote without showing identification, but tell these same people that Jesus has compassion for an unborn child, and they'll shout separation between church and state faster than Al Gore global warming can melt your Slurpee from 7-Eleven. Yes, the mainstream media, tons of fun. Well, this week, the mainstream media has been throwing a little hissy fit, actually a big hissy fit, over Romney's obvious Wednesday night victory in the debate. Television news commentaries are many and varied, but your old pal Bob has synthesized them for you, and the argument goes like this. Well, sure, Romney had a good night, but that was all because of style. It had nothing to do with his points, and Obama was off his game. You see, Obama is such a nice guy. He would never think of attacking an opponent. He was also ahead in the polls, so he felt the best thing was to simply be calm and not rock the boat. Obama still looked very presidential while allowing Romney to treat him like a punching bag. Well, just wait for the next debate. Obama will be ready. No more Mr. Nice Guy. Yeah, what happened to that nice guy Obama who never, ever puts down his opponents? But leave it to climate expert Al Gore to offer a better explanation. The climate, now I'm quoting him exactly, he said in an interview with Current TV, post-debate interview, I'm going to say something controversial here. Obama arrived in Denver at 2 p.m. today, just a few hours before the debate started. Romney did his debate prep in Denver. When you go to 5,000 feet, you only have a few hours to adjust. I don't know. Good idea, Al. Why didn't the rest of us think of these things? Since altitude contributes to the overall feel of climate, we can make a case that Obama experienced his own personal climate change. On the other hand, Gore might be onto something profound and symbolic. A kind of climate did seem to be a contributing factor Wednesday night. By losing control of the discussion, moderator Jim Lehrer created a new climate where our two candidates had far more chance to confront each other directly. In other words, by accident, America witnessed something much closer to a real debate. Generally, the liberal media moderators set the tone of the evening by subtly sneaking their own views into the questions like a Trojan horse. Lehrer tried. Oh, he tried. He threw softballs to Obama, such as, no, about the idea that in order to reduce the deficit, there has to be revenue in addition to the cuts, or another softball. But Mr. President, you're saying in order to get the job done, it's got to be balanced. Well, didn't work. Did not work. The debate raged on between a very comfortable, energetic Romney and a surprised-looking president. Poor Putz never knew what hit him. Had he been able to select a lifeline by phoning a friend or polling the audience, he might have tried. He came close by reminding Lehrer that it might be time to move on to another topic, but Lehrer's loss of control did not prevent Obama from having ample time to defend his four-year record. In fact, when they timed it, Obama actually talked more. Unfortunately, confronted by his opponent for the very first time, Obama's sound bites and sanctimonious platitudes about the rich needing to pay their fair share were no match for an honest challenge. America saw the real Mitt Romney, not the greedy, out-of-touch monster created and floated by the Obama campaign commercials. The Romney who showed up on Wednesday was a successful businessman who actually understands economics, a man sympathetic to the poor and middle class, but caring enough about them to explain why Obamanomics simply doesn't work. It was like hearing an announcement that the emperor isn't wearing any clothes. The Obama campaign will make very sure this doesn't happen again. If they thought they could get away with it, they'd probably cancel the next two debates and explain that the American people aren't interested in arguments, only the issues. Well, that won't work. It would look like Obama was throwing in the towel. Instead, they'll see to it that the next debate stays under the protective wing of an objective moderator. And what that means in the little lexicon is objective moderator means liberal moderator. We already know that one of the debates will be full of town hall questions. But you see, the moderator will select which questions to use. Count on questions about Romney's 47% statement and Bain Capital. Don't expect to hear about recently surfaced Obama videos regarding wealth redistribution or racism during Hurricane Katrina aftermath. And the past will also be off limits. Reverend Wright will not be mentioned. Neither will Bill Ayers. Then again, the moderator might make an exception and allow a question about young Romney allegedly bullying a gay kid. We'll also hear questions about Republicans being on a war against women because they show too little sympathy for female law school students who can't afford 10 bucks for a contraceptive. The real persecution of women in countless Muslim countries will not be brought up. Their plight, you see, is not a politically correct problem. And so her friend Al Gore came close. There was climate change on Wednesday, but with a little careful nurture on the part of the mainstream media, the environment can still be saved. The next debate is likely to bring back the kind of debate climate we have all grown to know and love. Or as Al might put it, the next debate is likely to bring back the kind of debate climate that we have all grown to know and love. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to The Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. It's always been great joy and a lot of fun to be here with my regular co-host, Matt Simone. Matt, welcome to our program.
Well, hello, Bob. How are you doing today?
Doing okay. And what's on your radar today? Probably a lot of stuff about the election, I would guess. But whatever. We're an open show here. You can talk about anything you want, even green Chinese pottery if you'd like.
Well, Bob, you know what? The good news is I had my daily dose of caffeine, and I am wound and bound and wired for sound today.
Boy, that must mean that whenever I'm around you, you've had your daily dose of caffeine, because I don't know you ever to not be wound and bound for sound. But then who am I to talk? I'm not exactly Harpo Marx in the voice department. So.
Hey, you know what? I just wanted to throw a little tidbit in there. Did President Obama have his acceptance speech from the Democratic National Convention?
Yeah, it's amazing. The altitude didn't affect him. Well, Al's explanation was that you have to have time to acclimate to it.
That's right.
And you see, since Romney was already there for a few hours, he had the advantage.
Well, Bob, I thought, you know, we'd give people a little bit of a change up here to let them know that we are just a broad spectrum kind of guy with issues and subjects. So I thought I'd start something with pretty lighthearted.
And okay.
So how about baseball? So about a week ago yesterday, did you hear about the Phantom Grand Slam? Did you hear about
that? I did not.
You didn't? Well, there was a baseball game between the Washington Nationals and the St. Louis Cards. And there was an outfielder named Mike Morris for the Nationals, and he hit a ball to the outfield, and it bounced into play. And there was this controversy of whether it was a home run or not. So everybody, the bases are loaded, so everybody's taking off. The ball bounces into play. This guy gets thrown out, and now there's going to be a video replay. So this guy, poor guy, didn't know what to do, so he's like standing in the middle of the field. So they do the replay. And they find out that it was a grand slam. So this young guy runs the bases backwards. He gets to home plate, and at the urging of the rest of his team, he fakes a swing with no bat, and there the ball goes, and he runs around the bases for a grand slam.
Now, how did they and the referees called it?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So they corrected it and they let him come back to do it.
That's interesting, because this was not too far from the big football controversy we had with the temporary refs. And
absolutely. And so the truth is that is the first Phantom swing in Major League Baseball.
I see a new musical here. Phantom of the Baseball Diamond.
You got
by
it.
Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice.
Absolutely. So, Bob, the first place I wanted to go to is this, that for a lot of you out there, you might realize that it is Pulpit Freedom Sunday.
And, yes, tell them about that. That's important.
Well, I want to start with two things. I had two firsts that have actually happened to me today. Today was my first time that I've ever been to one of the services for Pulpit Freedom Sunday. And today was the first time in my life, along with my wife, that I got stuck in an elevator at church.
Now, Dana and I both know about that, because we got stuck in an elevator on our way to do a show here at the station. I think it was, 6 months ago? Longer than that? Something like that.
You know, so we were on this elevator, and my wife was taking care of some, actually she brought snacks for Bob's class.
Oh, I see. I can see this already. It's my fault. If she hadn't brought snacks for Bob's class, you wouldn't have gotten stuck in the elevator.
Absolutely. And this is the first time I've ever taken this elevator. So I thought, well, I'll ride down with my wife instead of taking the floor flights. So we get on, and there was another couple there that are with us, and they fortunately got off at the third floor, and we were going to the first floor. So they get off, and we're just standing there, do-do-do-do-do. Next thing I know, we're on the first floor, I think, because it's flashing one, and the doors aren't opening. My wife looks at me and goes, are we stuck in here? I go, well, let me see. So I'm pushing the open doors. I'm hitting all the buttons.
At least you're on a floor. We were between floors when we got stuck.
Well, I was hoping I was on the bottom floor. So what happened is they have the little call box. So I, you know, push the button. I start talking to this person. And it's actually the company, I guess, that handles the repairs for the elevators and such.
Oh, you mean they're not outsourced to India? You don't have somebody from India taking your call?
No,
hello, Mr. Simone. How are you today?
No, it did not sound like that.
Okay.
So I'm talking to this person, going through everything like this. And then all of a sudden, some people must have heard us on from the outside. And they're saying, now we're going to call 911. Is there a medical emergency? And I'm like going, okay, man, this is like too much right now. So, Bob, what do? You use self-help. We're resourceful people. So I just went to the door and I pulled it open and we walked out.
Matt, you're not supposed to help yourself out. You live in the age of the nanny state. People want to help you. They don't want you to help yourself.
Well, you know what? I just thought it was the right thing.
Didn't you say that somebody chewed you out when you got out of there?
Yeah. So,
now, what was their problem?
Well, their problem was that, you know, I could have got hurt by the door, you know, that it could, you know, I guess closed on me. And I'm just thinking, well.
Translation, we could have had a lawsuit. I don't know if they were thinking about your best wishes.
Yeah. And of course, I'm a lawyer, so everybody thinks it's the worst always. But I thought, you know, the worst thing would have been so embarrassing is that my son-in-law is a firefighter in that area. And for him to just pull the door open and say, couldn't you have just done this? I was embarrassed, so I thought I'd do it myself.
Well, regarding my responsibility that if your wife hadn't brought snacks, in the tradition of our fine president, I want to say that if it weren't for that video about Muhammad circulating on the internet, you wouldn't have got trapped in the elevator. It had nothing to do with my class on the snacks. It was that video, darn it.
And we may get to that. So let's talk about Pulpit Sunday. So this has its history in a little addendum that was added to the Internal Revenue Code, and it was called the Johnson Amendment. Now, this is the interesting
thing.
Lyndon
Baines Johnson, when he was running for senator.
Yes, actually. And this has got an interesting backstory to it. And the backstory is this. In 1948, he was running for Senate. And when he was running, he was in a very, very close race with a gentleman named Coke Stevenson. And there is this idea that there was a massive voter fraud on Johnson's part because he only won like 87 votes. Okay. And so they were doing a recount. The Stevenson guy came up with a lot of great challenges. Johnson got it blocked by a very cooperative court. So now let's fast forward for, 6 years later, and it's 1954, and Johnson's trying to get reelected, and there's these two nonprofit organizations that were anti-communist, and they did not like the fact that Johnson had a liberal agenda. So they wanted to do something about it, so they got involved. So in retaliation, Johnson inserted this language in the IRS code that prohibited nonprofits, including churches, from endorsing or opposing candidates for political office. So, in effect, Johnson used the power of the majority Democratic Party at that time to just rubber stamp this, and the IRS tried to silence the opposition, which it worked, but unfortunately, it affected churches also. And so, since that time in 1954, churches and pastors cannot talk about candidates who are running for elective office.
See the wonderful things that always happen when we have majority Democrats in Congress? It's just amazing.
So,
He was a pretty cold-blooded customer, LBJ. He knew how to get things done. There was more legislation passed under his presidency, I believe, than anybody else's.
Really?
That might have changed with Obama and his health care, but he got things done. He was quite the astute politician.
Well, the interesting thing about this amendment to the IRS code was this. There are there's a category, and the category is 501Cs.
And then there's different versions. And this was a 501c3.
Right, and there's 29 different versions of it, but the only one that got affected was 501c3s.
So the church got affected kind of by osmosis.
Exactly. So they happen to be part of the three. And so nobody else was affected except for churches. And so we have the Alliance Defense Fund that is coming to the aid of all these pastors around the country who want to participate, which we think is somewhere over 1,500 of them. And they are saying that it is a constitutional violation. And the key reasons why are as follows. One is that they say it violates the Establishment Clause, requiring the government to excessively and pervasively monitor the speech of churches to ensure they're not transgressing the restrictions in the amendment. This would be the pulpit police that our pastor always talks about.
Right.
And then so government then would truly have to start showing up at churches and monitoring everybody's speech. And they're saying this is definitely a violation of the Constitution. The next thing is that it violates the free speech clause, which requires government to discriminate against speech based solely on content. And so basically, you're free to do that. The Supreme Court has invalidated this kind of speech discrimination over the last decades. And to do something like that is unconstitutional. They go on. It violates this free speech clause by conditioning the receipt of tax exemption on refraining from certain speech. So literally what they're trying to do is say, well, you want this tax exemption, then you can't talk about certain things, even if they're scriptural in nature.
And people try to get around that by saying, well, you shouldn't. Okay, if you want your free speech, take it. But the tax exemption is a special right. But then the tax exemption isn't really a special right. That would be inherent in our Constitution,
absolutely,
too.
And that is a constitutional right, separation of church and state.
Because if the church can be taxed, then the church can be controlled. And the idea of, see, this is what separation between church and state really means.
That's
it's
exactly
not this
it.
Nonsense. Are you putting up a manger scene? That's not what it means. It means the church is not supposed to be controlled by the government.
That's it.
Or censored by the government.
There should be no invasion by the government in the pulpit or in the church.
Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion or prohibiting its free exercise thereof. People always forget the prohibiting its free exercise part. They always talk about free separation between church and state when they're trying to restrain the speech of the church. They never talk about restraining the state from interfering. That's the other side of the coin.
Absolutely. So that in a nutshell is the Johnson Amendment and what is happening with Pulpit Freedom Sunday.
Great. So we not only have the Vietnam War to thank him for, but we've got the pulpit, not Pulpit Freedom Sunday, but the cause that created Pulpit Freedom
Sunday.
Yeah,
the good old Johnson Amendment.
Now, the only thing is they're anxious to bring these things up to the Supreme Court, and gosh, it's such a coin toss with the Supreme Court. Who knows how they'll rule?
Well,
it might depend on what kind of pizza they ate the night before.
Well,
I mean, be careful what you wish for, I say.
Exactly. And then, Bob did a show last week that I think was very, very important. And I think a lot of people have been listening to it. And if you haven't, go back to it. Because one of the things that people forget, people always ask me, well, Matt, how can you really support this guy and not the other guy, da, 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 da. Well, the bottom line is the next president of the United States is probably going to appoint probably 3 to as many as 5 Supreme Court justices. And if you have some particular interests that you feel strong about, those could all change and America could look a lot different.
And we're not always sure how even the conservative appointees will vote, but we're always sure how the liberal appointees will vote.
Well,
The liberal ones always stay true to their convictions. The conservative ones sometimes give us the short end of the stick.
Well, let's go
now,
to
you,
that.
You were happier about Robert's decision than I was, I think. Go ahead.
Okay.
Make your case. I might have to argue with the lawyer on the air. Go ahead. Give us your best shot. Make your case. Go ahead.
I'm not going to go to the Roberts right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go to a...
Darn it. Just salivating here. I thought you were going to throw me some red meat.
I'm going to go to another conservative judge that was appointed by Ronald Reagan. Okay, back on September 17th of 2012, a convicted murderer. So this is under the category, what are you thinking? What are you thinking when you do this stuff? A convicted murderer in Massachusetts, Robert Kilsicki, who is now called Michelle, won the right to a state-funded sex change and is also eligible to have legal funds expected the top $500,000 paid as well by this federal judge. In this landmark decision, the judge found that the prison officials had violated his Eighth Amendment right to protection against cruel and unusual punishment and that surgery was the only adequate treatment for his gender identity disorder.
Cruel. Now, when this guy gets his gender changed, does he get to go live in the women's prison?
That's one of the questions.
If I were
asking.
In a male prison, I'd try to find a way to get transferred to the women's prison.
Well, he won't be adequately equipped, though, Bob. But anyway, so let's go to another one.
Now you're saying this was a Reagan appointee judge made that decision?
Yeah, it was actually.
Okay, so that's my point.
Yeah.
Even the conservatives come and make these ridiculously stupid
decisions. But you got to remember, it was Massachusetts.
Oh, well.
Okay, yeah, it was in Massachusetts, so it could be almost like saying somebody was appointed into Reagan in California.
Yeah, what good thing comes out of Massachusetts? Yeah. Oh, Romney. Our only hope against Obama, Romney.
Okay.
All right, we'll hear your next one when you come back. I'm here with Matt Simone. You are listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Matt's going to take you through the politics and news of the day when we return. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. This is Bob Siegel co-hosting the show with me today, Matt Simone. Now, as Matt mentioned before we went to the break, last week I did a very special show where I appealed directly to evangelical Christians who had voted for Obama or were considering doing it again. Now, let me be clear. I don't believe the president of the United States has to be a Christian, even though I am a Christian. I care about his policies and his values. His faith and theology is his own business. For example, I'm going to be supporting Romney. I am not a Mormon. But Romney's values and policies I can accept. However, since many evangelicals voted for Obama precisely because he claimed to be a Christian, what I did last week is I compared his position and voting record with the teachings of the Bible, and I asked my audience to go online the next day after the show was going to post and send the links to any friends who they might think would benefit from this education. I'm happy to tell you that thousands of you did just exactly that. We got literally thousands of downloads. Keep it up. Though there are still a few weeks before the election, and there are several shows we've done these past few weeks. We've been doing them a month early so that they would have time to keep circulating on the internet. And I want to list a couple of them by date because they can all be streamed or downloaded from my website. They're very easy to find. The show that I just mentioned, if you want to go on and find that, it's called Evangelicals for Obama with a question mark. The date of that show is September 20th. Then my other co-host, Dana Wright, did a two-part program with me. It was called Why I Voted for Obama in 2008, but Will Not Vote for Him Again. Dana bravely stepped out of her comfort zone, explained why she voted for Obama in 2008, why she now regrets the decision. She and I then entered into a discussion which addressed Obama supporters, but in a respectful way. This two-part program can be found on my website with the dates September 2nd and September 9th. And then for your friends who feel Christians should never be involved with politics, that unbiblical myth is dealt with in a program I did with another co-host, Mike Friedenberg, and it's called Would Jesus Want Christians Involved with Politics? And that one dates August the 26th. Of course, after tomorrow, you're also going to want to download this show that I'm doing today with Matt. Say hello again to Matt Simone.
Hi, Bob. So we're going to continue on with the segment of What Were You Thinking? Now, this one's a little sadder, though, Bob. In Michigan, a woman named Amanda Clayton committed welfare fraud. I don't know if you heard about this.
Is this the one that won the lottery and then
She kept cashing her welfare checks.
And she passed away recently.
And she won $1 million. And her justification was that she took the net settlement, which was only $750,000.
That's because Uncle Sam mugged her in the parking lot after they handed that
to her. But after that was over, she had like a half a million left over.
Oh,
but, you know,
only a half a million? Yeah, of course she still needed those welfare checks, the poor dear.
But here's the tragic thing. She died of an overdose.
And she used a lot of that money for drugs.
Yeah, she used it for drugs, and she left two kids behind.
Oh, that is sad.
That is sort of sad as far as what they're thinking. But let's go to somebody else that maybe should know better. Not. Okay, this month, Samuel L. Jackson was doing an ad against Mitt Romney.
Oh, and you know, he's a phenomenal actor, but I wish these actors would keep their mouths shut about social issues and politics.
Yeah, and so I don't know if any of you guys got to see it. You can go to YouTube and probably Google
it. Oh, I saw it. It is horrendous.
But what we have going down here is we have a little girl that walks in the room, asks her parents a question, are they going to vote, and they just sort of blow her off, and then they're just sitting there, and all of a sudden this black man, Samuel L. Jackson, mysteriously just shows up in their living room, and he says to
them. And he's using the F word and all kinds of stuff.
And he says this, he's warning the viewers now.
Now be careful to edit it read. No, we have FCC regulations.
That's why I wrote it down. Okay, what's happening here, there is an out-of-touch millionaire that is waging war on schools, unions, and the environment. But he didn't stop there. He advised the viewers to wake the F up.
Oh, great.
Okay. Between
this and Madonna's endorsement for Obama and Hugo Chavez's endorsement from Obama, Clint Eastwood, you have been avenged, I say.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about it before, and that the National Communist Party also endorses President Obama.
Oh, and after he got elected the first time, the day after the election, Ahmadinejad in Iran said congratulations publicly. He says he's happy about the new president of America. He believes there will be change. Well, he was right. We got change, all right.
Well, here's the point that I really want to make. I mean, he's talking about an out-of-touch millionaire. Well, I did some research, and he's worth $150 million.
And how much does he give to charity? You know, they looked at how much Joe Biden and Obama give to charity. It doesn't even come close to what Mitt Romney gives, because liberals, as they always say, liberals are generous with other people's money, not their own money.
I mean, it's absolutely amazing. You talk about an out-of-touch millionaire, but it didn't stop there. The Democratic Party was not over. How about this one? They sent out an e-card to women that said this: vote like your lady parts depend on it, because they kind of do. Can you imagine that they thought so little of women?
No wonder guys are trying to get sex change operations. Yeah. It's more convenient to be a woman these days.
Well, you know what I'm saying? You're trying to get that vote, and you have that vote wrapped up, and then what you're doing is they vote your lady parts. I mean, how shallow do they think these people are?
Yeah.
Fortunately, that e-card was pulled within a couple hours, and most people didn't know about it. But let me repeat that. Here you go. It went like this: vote like your lady parts depend on, because it kinda does.
And just to set the record straight, there's no law in our country that says women can't have contraceptives. The protest is that they're trying to force charitable institutions and churches, some Catholic who don't believe in contraceptives, some Protestant who don't have a problem with contraceptive, but they have a problem when abortion is called contraceptive. Obama gave many lies about his health care, but one of them was that it would not fund abortion. And yet the biggest controversy right now is that they're trying to fund abortion. I always like to say this, I'll say it again. I believe in the rights of all women, including baby women. That's our platform. It's not this crusade. And yet when there are women in Afghanistan, they'll get their hands cut off if they try to teach, or that's the way it was before America got there. Oh, that's not a politically correct cause. We're not supposed to be concerned about that.
Well, I know one of your favorite people is Dennis Prager.
And he is one of my favorite. He's a man I admire very much.
And Dennis Prager said this about President Obama. He worships a different type of trinity.
Oh, yes. This was great. Yes.
He says his trinity is race, gender, and class warfare.
Yep.
And so when we take a look at those big three, and if we look at these two ads, it just reminds me of the Meatloaf song, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. He went there, okay? He went for 2 out of 3. So let's move on. And here's another thing. What were they thinking? So surely the president was trying to galvanize the nation at this particular time. So what did the president do? He came out with his own flag. Did you see that?
Oh, I did see that. The Obama flag.
Yeah, and it can be yours for a low price of $19.99 plus shipping and handling.
Sounds like a
bargain.
And
if you take care of it right now, call right now, we'll give you 2 for the price of 1.
Did they throw in an 8x5 glossy of Obama with it?
I just wonder what these people are thinking when this stuff happens.
Plus, you get egg roll, you get the Obama decoder ring, you get all kinds of stuff here.
So let's move on. Okay, so I want to talk about some other stuff. So do you guys remember when you were growing up, Reader's Digest had Enriching Your Word Power? There was this point where you would go and you take a look at the different words there and you try and guess what the definition was. So what we're going to look at next is some words that have come up in the news that I'd like to look at.
Okay, we'll look forward to that. This is Bob Siegel and Matt Simone. We'll be right back. Your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com. Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with Matt Simone.
Okay, Bob, so enriching our word power, I heard some people using some words this week that I thought were pretty intriguing. The first one is repressive tolerance, and they defined it as follows. It's where hurt feelings trump common sense. Or to put it another way, if you want everybody to be happy, no one can have anything. And I'm going to give you some case in points along that line. So number one is this. Cranston, Rhode Island, a school district is banning father-daughter dances ACLU was notified that their client was suing for gender discrimination under the Rhode Island law. They found a single mother who claimed her daughter could not attend a dance because a father was not part of her life. And the district went on further. They banned the mother-son baseball game also.
Oh, just when you think it couldn't get stupider, they are putting magazines like The Onion out of business because satire can't create stuff anymore and keep up with what's really happening.
So what they're doing is they're basically coming to this idea that traditions are passe, they're antiquated, and the new modern world order must be politically correct, palatable, and gender neutral. But it doesn't stop there. Let's go to the Grand Tar Heels, the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Did you know that you no longer can call incoming students at the university freshmen?
Right.
Because it's sexist? They are now all called first-year students.
Right. Well, you know, we need to then ban the word woman because the word woman originally means taken from man.
So, okay, but let's stick with the...
Maybe if he should just not talk at all, then nobody will get their feelings hurt.
But wait, this is even funnier. Okay, so now let's stick with the University of North Carolina. I mean, they really have this policy. This is a policy at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. You cannot implicitly or explicitly ask someone for sex. So I don't know. Does everybody go around winking? Do they use sign language or whatever to communicate?
Well, you know what's so funny is a number of years ago when they were having all the talk about date rape, the whole idea was if you're getting hot and heavy but you didn't actually vocally ask, you could be accused of rape. So now people are asking, but you can't ask either. So what is left to just not have? I know what's left to go to the prison and get that sex change operation. Well, that's what's left.
Well, I know this stuff must be going on in the university because it's not a Christian college and they didn't sign up for this thing. And I did check on one thing, Bob, so you would know. There is a Planned Parenthood really close to this place. So, you know, somebody's getting something.
Yeah.
I'm not saying what.
I mean, but wouldn't they be putting Planned Parenthood out of business by doing this?
I have no idea. But wait, it gets even better. They have a civility code that everything has to be nice and everybody has to use civil speech from now on.
And these are the people that we're calling the most educated in our country.
Yeah. And so now, we used to be able to send our kids to be able to learn, debate issues and subjects and have disagreements in a setting that was to stimulate education. Now they're worried about somebody calling somebody a knucklehead, a jerk, or for heaven's sake, an expletive, and you're going to be kicked out of school?
You know, why don't we just ban the phrase, have a nice day, because that could show persecution to people that prefer nighttime. I mean, that could be showing just great insensitivity. So you shouldn't even wish somebody a nice day.
Well, how would the civil rights movement have proceeded if you couldn't have done anything or had some kind of civil discourse?
Well, so then by that logic, the moment they call somebody a racist, which the ACLU loves to do, they'd have to say, well, that's hurting somebody's feelings because maybe he doesn't like being called a racist.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's go to another one. Now let's go to another part. Now, this has to do particularly with Michelle Obama.
And her food police
stuff? The fighting obesity, all these high schools now have to be under the Health Hunger Free Kids Act that she has pushed, and they actually now have a maximum amount of calories that a kids can have a day, and depending on your age group, but in high school, they can have 850 calories.
And this is a political party that always says it's your body and it's your choice.
That is,
if you want to have an abortion.
Right.
But we'll tell you what to eat, where to go to school, what kind of cars to drive, what kind of music to listen to.
So this is what's happening. So you get these little 100-pound girls, 850 calories is okay. Then you get these 250-pound guys that are football players and stuff. They're going, hey, we're hungry. Will you feed us? And they can't get fed. No, wait. But let's say, but capitalism is alive.
And then the little girl gets to go and audition to be on the football team and try out because otherwise you're just, even though the guys are twice her size.
But we do know that capitalism lives because in New Bedford, Massachusetts, they have created a black market for chocolate syrup. They've been smuggling in bottles of chocolate syrup, and they've been selling it by the squeeze. So the new drug of choice is chocolate syrup in New Bedford, Massachusetts.
Matt, that was a racist comment. You called an illegal market a black market. Why don't we call an illegal market a white market?
Well,
and the song White Christmas should be banned this year, too.
Because, I guess, you know, so. Well, it's one of those euphemisms that's commonly accepted, I guess. So I guess I can get away with
it.
Besides, I'm on your show.
None of this stuff surprises me anymore. That's what's really scary. It just doesn't, I mean, can you imagine somebody hearing about this even 5 years ago? Imagine 10 or 20 years ago. You brought up Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager always says, we've had the age of enlightenment, the age of reason. We will be known as the age of stupidity.
Well, I want to go to a different word. And this was an interesting word. And it was called a hate fact. Now, a hate fact is the
elephant. I'll bet it has nothing to do with a real fact. I'm just going to go out on a hunch here.
Well, this is the elephant in the room. So something is perceived as hateful or unsayable, but it's true. It's the thing that everybody's thinking, but nobody says because of the response they may receive, but it's still true. So let me see if I can give you some examples. It may be a bit harder to give birth to a child if you get older. I guess there's a shelf life on ovaries. You know, so, but that's not something you should actually be saying to people. How about this?
Now, why is that wrong to say that to people?
Well, you know, I guess we're limiting their ability to have children. I don't know what it is.
I'm such an insensitive guy. God. I just don't see the logic and rationale for some of these. I need people like Al Gore and Michelle Obama to explain it to me.
Yeah. Well, how about this? You know, certain groups may not shine so brightly on IQ tests. The fact is that certain ethnic groups do better. But you say that kind of stuff.
Asians kick butt.
Yeah.
But you compliment Asians?
I wasn't going to.
You're a racist of the worst kind.
Bob, I wasn't going to name groups, but thanks for doing that.
Well, you know, since it's my show, I'll take the heat.
Okay. And here's another one. Guns aren't all bad. Now, if you say that with people, they just freak out. And
well, sure, the guns are bad. It's not the poor criminal. Let's put the guns in jail. Then we won't have any violence. Let's lock up those guns.
That's right. What's the phrasing? That guns don't kill people. People kill people.
Yeah.
And then we don't have the other side of the story of how many.
We teach birth control, but we don't teach self-control.
Well, or the fact that stats show that maybe people that are armed stop crimes. But that's it. But here's something else so interesting.
You're confusing us with the facts.
That's right. Matthew. So how do we get to the point where facts are offensive? This country started out with Thomas Jefferson saying this: there is not a truth existing which I fear or would wish unknown to the whole world. But today's liberals have created an environment where anything that makes anyone uncomfortable is hate speech, even if it's true, and especially, Bob, if it's true.
Well, what did Thomas Jefferson know? He was white. He was a slave owner. He was a male. I mean,
sort of.
So we shouldn't pay attention to anything he ever said.
Yeah. Except for the slave owner, I guess I could identify.
Well, and of course, he was in his day, he was one of the first people to speak out against slavery. He was tortured over the fact that he had slaves. But we don't want to look at that part of his life.
No. So I'm going to throw in a little bit of legal jargon right now to make my next point. And it is the legal theory of called res ipsa loquitur. And in Latin, it means...
Boy, that is jargon. I didn't understand any of that.
Yeah, res ipsa loquitur, and it means the thing speaks for itself. And so let me give you a definition of this. It's presumed where a person has exclusive control over something that caused an injury, and there's no evidence that they did anything wrong, but there was a negligent act, and we'll follow that up.
Okay, we'll follow that up when we return. You're listening to Bob Siegel and Matt Simone.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net.
Welcome back to our program. I'm here with Matt Simone. Our country no longer knows right and wrong. We've lost our moral compass. It's not right and wrong. It's black and white, rich and poor, male and female. And here to wade through this mud with me, Matt Simone.
Okay, we're going to get back to this concept of res ipsa loquitur. I'm going to make it real simple for you. Let me give you an example. So I go to the hospital, and I'm going to have my right leg cut off. So they mark my right leg. I go into the operating room, and when I come out, my left leg's gone. Now, I went in. Somebody did something. I was out. I don't know what they did, but somebody is culpable. Somebody is negligent. Somebody did something wrong. That is res ipsa loquitur. The thing speaks for itself.
Well, I can tell you it was George Bush's fault. If it hadn't been for his presidency, they wouldn't have made that mistake in the hospital.
Well, we're going to get to that. Okay, so that brings me up to this next point that I'm going to make. In the last couple of weeks, there was a finding by an independent review board of the actions of Eric Holder regarding Fast and Furious. Okay, and if you're not familiar with Fast and Furious, that was where the government's idea to allow guns across the border into Mexico so they could find the bad guys. It's called gun walking.
And it's just one of a lot of things on a big list of horrible deeds by this worst attorney general we have ever had.
So this is the case that I'm making, all right, in regard to this. So in the documents, it suggests that Eric Holder had no involvement in Fast and Furious. Now, let me get this, tell you this. Even though Congress requested documentation, they didn't get that documentation to do the final review.
Because of executive privilege.
Executive privilege. But what happened was they found no evidence that he knew about Fast and Furious, period. Interesting, though.
But the whole thing was under his watch. He was.
Here's the interesting thing,
though. He was in charge of the whole kit and caboodle.
But interesting was that Eric Holder took credit for shutting down the whole Fast and Furious fiasco, even though he didn't know about it. So he took credit for it. So let's go on. Oh, and if you're wondering, Bob, it was Bush's fault. The Obama administration came out and claimed that Fast and Furious started under the Bush administration, but the report showed it was actually October of 2009.
Yeah, if you get a flat tire on your way to the store, it's George Bush's fault.
So let me set the stage for you and name names. Lenny Brewer, Gary Grindler, Jason Weinstein. These are all names that came up in the report having knowledge of Fast and Furious. Now, the president said that he had confidence in Eric Holder, but each one of these individuals is a key manager under Eric Holder. In fact, he probably sees them every day, and they're key allies for him at the Justice Department. So my question is this. How can you have confidence in someone who can't manage his key managers, and worse, had no idea what was going on?
Oh, but I think he was telling the truth. He has confidence that Eric Holder will carry out the real agenda that he has for Eric Holder, which has nothing to do with justice. It has to do with the old Chicago politics.
So this suggests one of two things. One, he knew, or two, he's absolutely clueless. Yeah. So res ipsa loquitur, the thing speaks for itself. Let me give you another example. The terrorist attack on the embassy. The attacks were, in fact, not terrorist.
The Libyan embassy.
Yeah, yep. The attacks were not terrorist motivated, according to the administration, but were based on the video that was being circulated. A video that came out in July. The attacks happened in September. It was circulated in the Middle East about 2 weeks prior to the attack of 9/11 of 2012. And we're supposed to believe that it was a spontaneous reaction. The facts would suggest that the Libyan president said it was a terrorist attack, and now even more, we're finding out there was more warnings.
Well, the facts would suggest that because that's what the Libyan president actually came out and said publicly.
He said that. But we had Susan Rice, Jay Carney, Hillary Clinton, all on television, letting us know that it was the video that caused the spontaneous
But they were
reaction.
Just doing what Obama told them to do, and now they're going to have to take the fall for
right.
him.
Right, they're going to take the heat for it. But 2 weeks later, John Carney goes on television saying it was self-evident that it was a premeditated attack. Obviously, though, nobody told the president because that night on Univision, he was still talking about the video. So based on the information that was presented, it seems the administration was unaware of the threat to our embassies prior to the attack, and it was terrorism.
Well, he was studying up to go on The View and on Letterman and Pimp with a Limp. So, you know, how could he be concerned about what's going on in the Middle East?
The thing speaks for itself. I mean, it's either bad intelligence. They're either stupid or they think we're all so stupid that we can't figure out what's going on.
Yeah, the word intelligence is becoming an oxymoron in our intelligence department. You know, Matt, what's going to happen a couple of weeks from now when they release the movie of Obama as the big hero who got bin Laden? You think that's going to spur on some terrorist attacks? I imagine it will. But we're going to hear that that movie had nothing to do with anything.
Well, you know, One of the things, it's something that does sort of make sense of why the administration may have done what it did, is there was a report on April 2010 that the Obama administration requires rewriting of government documents and a change in administrative vocabulary to remove terms that are deemed offensive to Muslims, including jihad, jihadist, terrorist, radical Islamic. Now, I'm not making this up. It was reported April 7th, Fox News, and even CBS picked it up on the same day. So I'm not making any of this stuff up.
And I just heard on the news, I don't remember which military academy, but at one of our military academies, one of the professors who is in the military got fired for teaching a course on radical Islam.
Yeah.
Now, I think he could have just made the course Islam, because Islam itself is a violent religion. There may be some peaceful Muslims, but he wasn't even saying that. He was distinguishing radical Islam from Islam, and he still got fired for calling it radical Islam.
You know, it just gets absurd. But let me see if I can make my feelings about the Middle East right now. It seems our reaction is always where we go wrong. You know, it's always like, what could we have done? Where did we go wrong? And we keep asking the wrong question.
It's the battered wife syndrome. My husband just beat me. Maybe I did something to provoke him.
He always steals my thunder. He always steal my thunder? I was going there. But you're right. Absolutely right,
Matt,
Bob.
Two brilliant minds think alike. That's all.
But it is. It's the idea. It must be me. I must have did something wrong. It's never the abuser. Why can't we get...
And then, you know, he had a rotten childhood. His mother didn't buy him a sled when he was a kid. Of course, we lived in Miami, but she didn't buy him a sled. And he always gets me flowers after he beats me, so give him a break.
And then we spend $70,000 for ads. Okay, now listen to this. Here's Bill Maher, HBO Bill Maher. Okay, he said this. He contributed $1 million to the president's campaign, so he's a homer. But watch this. This is the advice he gave Obama. He says, my advice to Obama has always been, stop trying to get everybody to like you. And I mean, that's almost what they try to do. He's just trying to
Yeah, of course, when Bill Maher says that, he means stop reaching out across the aisle and doing things in a bipartisan way. He doesn't mean stop trying to get the terrorists to like you. I wish that's what Bill Maher meant, but that's not what he means.
In case you're curious, the percentage of likely American voters who feel it's more important for the United States to make sure that nothing is done to offend other nations and cultures, the survey says 15%. That's all, 15%. Now, our nation's response to somebody exercising their First Amendment rights under the Constitution, even though this is horrible and hideous and offensive, you still got to let the guy do it. And I know you had a show about that too, Bob.
Yeah, oh, we did. Yeah, we did.
But nobody's offended by the so-called photograph, Piss Christ, that was in New York the same time, where it shows a small crucifix in the urine of the artist. I mean, I'm horrified about that. And the worst thing about that is our tax dollars from the National Endowment for Arts paid for that. Remember back, Bob, in February when we did the communist thing, you know, what's wrong, Marxism? I remember saying something about the 45 goals of communism. One of the things in that was this: to promote ugliness, repressive and meaningless art and repulsive art. That's what they're doing. And they're doing that same kind of stuff. And here this guy creates something that is absolutely hideous. But really, Bob, you didn't see me out there rioting. And why weren't you there, Bob? Why weren't you out there with me rioting over this Piss Christ thing? I just can't believe it. You know, sometimes I just don't understand where
Make that because we know we're not going to have a Volkswagen bus with nuns and machine guns that are going to go gun them down. They're not worried about that.
So they did another poll, though. The percentage of likely American voters who feel it's more important to guarantee the free speech, the survey says 72%, Bob. 15% on one hand, we're worried about how offended they are. 72% of Americans still believe in the First Amendment right.
Well, I'm glad they do. Unfortunately, I think we're on a road where one or two judges will decide whether we still have First Amendments. They'll interpret the Constitution for us and tell us whether First Amendment really means First Amendment. They'll tell us what free means. They'll tell us what speech means. We'll hear, not free speech, responsible speech. Not free speech. Sensitive speech. Well, anyway, for the next couple of weeks at least, we still have free speech in our country. So that means I'll see you with free speech next week. Matt, always great to have you on the show. We'll have you on again soon. I think I'll have you on the week before the election and hear from you again. See you next week, everybody.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.